Funding for Think comes from SMU Master and Doctor of Liberal Studies programs.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. If you have paid sick leave, count yourself lucky. 43 million Americans have to sacrifice income if they lose a few workdays to illness. And nationwide, only about 1 in 8 private sector workers benefits from formal policies that offer some pay to those who need time off to care for a family member in need. Without it, some people forced to take off work find themselves plunged into temporary poverty by the loss of income. Opponents of paid leave say such laws are inevitably job killers. But data from the 3 U.S. states that require it in some conditions suggest otherwise. And as my guest will tell us, politicians are beginning to pay attention to workers who believe paid leave would solve more serious problems than it creates. Journalist Lauren Sandler's article, Taking Care of Our Own, appears in the June issue of the New Republic magazine. She joins us as part of KERA's One Crisis Away initiative. Lauren, welcome back to Think.
Nice to be here.
This is an idea we've been talking about in this country, at least since the early 70s, but we have remained the only developed country without a national mandate for paid leave. Why is the issue, though, gaining traction once again in 2015?
Well, I must say, we're not only the only developed country, we are the only country other than Papua New Guinea on Earth that doesn't even give paid maternity leave. So it's pretty grim. And there are a lot of reasons why, one of which, you know, is really that we think that business trumps all, and there's this sort of logic that paid leave must be bad for business, right? Paying people not to work doesn't make any sense. However, what we've learned from states that have paid family leave is it is, in fact, better for business.
Let's listen to what President Obama had to say in his State of the Union address this year.
Today, we are the only advanced country on Earth that doesn't guarantee paid sick leave or paid maternity leave to our workers. 43 million workers have no paid sick leave. 43 million. Think about that. And that forces too many parents to make the gut-wrenching choice between a paycheck and a sick kid at home. So I'll be taking new action to help states adopt paid leave laws of their own. And since paid sick leave won where it was on the ballot last November, let's put it to a vote right here in Washington. Send me a bill that gives every worker in America the opportunity to earn 7 days of paid sick leave. That's the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do.
He says, send me a bill that gives every worker in America the opportunity to earn 7 days of paid sick leave. That sounds like a very modest goal. Are advocates of paid leave happy with that number?
I think that advocates tend to think that the White House could go further. However, Obama is the first sitting president who has even mentioned the issue. So, you know, it's step by step. This is definitely an issue with a lot of momentum behind it, but it has grassroots momentum that has been pushing it. It is only very recently that politicians have begun to pay attention.
You know that it's something that Hillary Clinton is campaigning on these days, rather all of a sudden.
That's true. And it's interesting because, you know, she really does want us to think of her as having this very, very deep, deep relationship with these issues going back long before her husband was in the White House. But I do wonder why she has been so quiet about this for so long. It's not like she hasn't had opportunities. And it's interesting thinking back to the 2008 election when we had Obama versus Clinton going for the Democratic nomination. This really wasn't an issue that anyone was talking about, which doesn't mean it was any less needed then.
Hillary Clinton's interest would certainly suggest that it may be something that her female constituents are particularly interested in. But I'm curious about, you know, what the split is. Are male workers as interested in paid leave and access to paid leave as women are?
It is something that gets branded as a women's issue because of the maternity question. But for all family leave policies, which are being considered right now in various states, and certainly the ones that exist in the existing states like California, Rhode Island, and New Jersey, the only states that offer paid family leave, it really isn't a maternity policy. It is a policy to take care of anyone. And as I like to say, we may not all be parents, but we all have parents. It's leave which is available when you have sick family members and also when you yourself need something. And so the fact that this has become sort of a women's issue, you know, it's a little problematic. On the one hand, women are just disproportionately affected by it. You know, we're the ones who tend to have babies, though there are men who adopt babies, and there's certainly men who may not be giving birth, but who really would benefit from that extra baby bonding time. But we also are the ones who tend disproportionately to care for our parents as well. And so while women are more affected by this, it's certainly something that everyone needs. However, analysts and sociologists who consider why we don't have it, unlike the rest of the world, do see it as a women's issue problem. In other words, that conservatives who believe that we shouldn't have this really get caught in this trap about thinking about what it means to incentivize women to work more and mother less, how this would not necessarily benefit stay-at-home mothers in the same way as it would working ones. And that really seems to be an ideological impasse that we're having a hard time pushing past.
You point out that a lot of the workplace policies that are just taken for granted today were put in place at a time when the norm was one breadwinner families, and more often than not, vastly more often than not, that breadwinner was a man.
Absolutely. Which, of course, meant that you had a wife to be the full-time family caretaker. And now that over two-thirds of families have a woman as the co- or principal breadwinner, that model simply doesn't work.
All right. We've had the Family Medical Leave Act in place since 1993. This is the 12 weeks of unpaid leave to care for a relative. First of all, what are the terms by which it provides time off with a guarantee that we can return to our jobs? Because not everybody qualifies for FMLA.
No, and in fact, over 40% of the country doesn't. So I think we have this notion, first of all, that everyone gets it when many of us don't. You need to be working for a company that has over 50 employees. You need to be working more than 25 hours a week. Furthermore, I think a lot of people assume that until they need it, that it's something which is paid because that's what the rest of the world gets. What it does is it protects you if you are amongst those 60% of workers to take 12 weeks off without pay, which for many Americans is a total impossibility.
Yeah, because 12 weeks without pay, I mean, for a lot of people who are, you know, a paycheck away or a month away from not being able to pay their bills, this is like a guarantee of a slide into poverty.
Absolutely. Poverty spells, which are what it's called when you have a very specific incident in life that pushes you into poverty, maybe temporarily, maybe permanently, are very, very linked to leave. It's not the main reason for them, but it is a principal one. And when you think about it, for people who are earning around, you know, just over the poverty level, a week's pay usually equals about a month's groceries. So if you are going to take even just a week off, that means you might not be able to feed your family for a month. So we've heard tons of stories about families who have found themselves homeless, have pawned off whatever possessions they have just to take care of, say, a dying mother or a brand new baby. It's a pretty scary situation.
How did we end up with that figure of only companies that have 50 employees or more are required to cooperate with family medical leave? Was that a concession made so that the bill could be passed at all into a law?
Absolutely. The march to pass the Family Medical Leave Act was a very lengthy process with many vetoes. Pat Schroeder put it forth in the 80s. It wasn't passed until Bill Clinton actually signed it as his first law when he took office in 93. And as it moved forward, it eroded, as these things tend to do. And so these were compromises that the business lobby demanded. And still the business lobby didn't want to pass this, just as the business lobby tends to be very opposed to paid medical leave. And it was the best they could do at the time. What's interesting is since 1993, there has been no movement in a federal law. It just simply stalled out. And when you think about how much our economy, our workforce, and our families have changed since 1993, it's really remarkable that we've been stuck here.
Is FMLA what women do who have children and are not covered with any kind of paid maternity leave?
Well, it's a job protection. So for people who need to take time off, it just ensures that they are not supposed to be fired for doing so. So whatever we have to rely on, that's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm. Is there evidence that workers who take advantage of FMLA, if it's available to them, suffer any kind of long-term repercussions? Has anyone looked into this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like many situations like this, not all employers are necessarily kind and friendly employers and sometimes don't really follow the law to its letter. Then again, there are plenty of private sector employees and public sector ones who have figured out that, yes, they can get paid leave. And generally, the higher your income is, the better your paid leave package is, right? So if you work at Facebook, you get 3 months at least of paid leave. If you work at Morgan Stanley, you do. If you have a child. However, if you don't, you're in a different situation, which is why when Microsoft decided about a month or two ago that all of their contract workers, which represents tens of thousands of workers, many of them more blue collar than white collar, Microsoft said, listen, we're not going to contract out to you unless you offer paid leave to your employees. That was a major shift. But this isn't an issue that we can solve just amongst business, because that isn't an even playing field, and it certainly doesn't apply to everyone. That's why we really need legislation behind it.
How is it that, I mean, the businesses that do this voluntarily, if it's so bad for business, why would they offer a benefit like this?
Well, it's not so bad for business, and that's the fallacy here. You know, California's had paid leave for over 10 years. New Jersey's had it for quite some time. There have been people who have really been studying the aftermath of these policies for business. And what has been found in really stunning numbers is how much better paid leave is for business. Some simple things like, you know, in California, 99% of businesses report either an improvement or no change at all in morale. In New Jersey, turnover costs have totally been reduced. You know, if you lose an employee, you have to hire a new one. And that costs, in the state of New Jersey at least, between $5,400 to over $18,000 per employee. If you don't have that turnover cost, you're saving a lot of money. So what we're finding is that even in states where businesses have really fought hard against it, now that they've got it, they realize it's a pretty good thing. It's sort of interesting to see that, for example, in California, 3/4 of conservatives now support the law. You know, when Schwarzenegger took over, you'd think as a Republican, he'd try to roll it back, but he didn't because everyone loves it. In New Jersey, when Christie was running for office, he said he was going to put an end to this, but you never heard about it again once he was in office, because the fact is, once it happens and people see how good it is for business, even small business likes it.
Now, the three states that have paid leave available now, California, New Jersey, and Rhode Island, also demonstrate that there are different ways to set up a program like this, to pay for a program like this. Can you talk about some of those variations?
Yeah, so this is one place when it gets a little complicated and a little wonky, so bear with me. But there are only several states in the country that have a system set up for temporary disability. So if you think of how our Social Security system works, right, we have to actually have something that we pay into that considers whether there's fraud, that pays us back. You know, you have to have an entity like that. And some states, California, New Jersey, and Rhode Island, have that. So do states without family leave, but only a few. You know, Hawaii, New York. New York is considering its own policy right now. So it's got something set up. But when you don't have that, it gets a little trickier. So, for example, Washington State passed paid family leave back in 2007, and they don't have an entity to distribute it, and they also can't agree on a revenue source for it, for who's going to actually pay for the thing. So they've been stuck. They have this bill on the books, and they haven't done anything about it because they're at this impasse. You know, in some states, you have employees that pay entirely into a fund, and that's exactly what they get paid back, usually at about 2/3 of what they earn on a weekly basis. So it's not an entitlement, it's an earned benefit. In other situations, you have employers paying half and you have employees paying half. That's exactly what actually our current federal bill, which is up for vote in Congress from Kirsten Gillibrand from New York and Rosa DeLauro from Connecticut, they are calling for a paid family leave act that involves half and half from employees and employers. There are a lot of different ways to see this, and different states are considering different ways to make it work right now.
We'll talk more about that in just a minute with my guest, journalist Lauren Sandler. Her article, Taking Care of Our Own, about paid leave, appears in the June issue of the New Republic magazine. You can join our conversation at 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Doctor of Liberal Studies program, a customizable evening doctoral program for Dallas community leaders and professionals. Now accepting applications for fall. More at smu.edu/DLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with journalist Lauren Sandler about her article, Taking Care of Our Own, which appears in the June issue of the New Republic magazine. It's part of KERA's One Crisis Away initiative. And if you'd like to join our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think. Okay, so Lauren, you were saying that there are different ways to pay for this. There are systems set up by which employees have to contribute all the money that they might ultimately draw back. There are things where the employer and the employee both contribute to this system. Are there systems in which taxpayers pick up the cost of this?
There are certainly ones that are being considered. That is one of the plans being considered in New York right now. But I think that the most important thing to raise is that there is a sense that employers have to pay for this out of their own pockets, full stop, that this is something that businesses can't afford. And the thing that I think is most worth noting is that in all situations, this is something that employees are really responsible for on their own, whether as taxpayers or whether it's something that they pay into alongside employers.
Is there, you know, I wonder how often people bring up the question that this will be abused, you know, setting aside the fact that everyone understands that there can be a real crisis. Is that one of the arguments against paid leave?
Of course. And what California has found in its over a decade now looking at this is that there really hasn't been any abuse. You know, you have a system that considers whether things will be fraudulent or not. And, you know, for example, it's pretty hard to prove that you didn't have a baby if you had a baby. And so, you know, I think that when people are hell-bent on making sure that something isn't going to happen, they try to stoke paranoia and they try to assume that we can't trust our own citizens and that there will be no checks and balances. But like anything else, this is just something else that fits into the system.
I can understand fiscal conservatives being concerned about having yet another tax-funded entitlement, but how is the political resistance against this built up in cases where it appears that sort of all involved will be shielded from a great deal of financial liability for these things, particularly systems in which all the money that an employee would draw back is money that that individual employee has put into the system?
Well, you know, it's politics. So people talk about it as though that's not what's going to happen, right? So Senator Gillibrand has told me that she has to go around from senator to senator to sit down and explain this is something that employees pay into, full stop. You know, the sense is simply that that isn't what happens, which is completely inaccurate. But what's interesting is, you know, there's the block against this that politicians themselves tend to have, and then there's the feeling about it that voters tend to have. And there's a huge gap there right now. So, you know, for example, in California, as I think I mentioned, 75% of conservatives now support this. A majority of Republican women polled support this. 64% of people across the board, across aisles, say that they are more likely to vote for a candidate for paid leave. And in the last election, if a candidate supported paid family leave alongside equal pay and other similar measures, their numbers went up 8% automatically. And so I think that it's, you know, this, you asked why suddenly this is a political moment. I think that people are beginning to understand that this is something that we can't look away from because voters demand it at a grassroots level and increasingly through national polling.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone now to Nick in Fort Worth. Hello, Nick.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment that I'm all for paid maternity leave and the laws to protect women when they're having a baby. But my issue with the topic is putting a law in place federally to regulate our state laws. I'd be more inclined to do maybe a large tax incentive rather than a federal regulation.
Thanks for your call.
So I'd love to speak back to that. You know, this temporary disability situation that I described, this is one of the reasons why I think we need a federal law. And that is that to set up state by state, you know, a building that would, you know, where people can work that would govern this, a whole group of employees who can work state by state, it's an incredibly expensive and unwieldy thing to create 50 different, or I guess there are six existing, so 44 different establishments to do this, whereas we could have one federally. Furthermore, imagine you live in, say, Northern California, and you've spent years paying into your fund, and then you move across the border into Oregon. All that money's gone. I would think that if we think that this is a good idea, this is something that we really need nationally. Furthermore, you know, where people are dealing with poverty and where people do not have the rights that other people may have in other states, that's where they're least likely to get this state by state. And that is often where it's most needed. So I think that, you know, if we have this as an even benefit, that makes it an even right for all citizens, which many people have just considered to be a basic right around the world. Furthermore, if there's a more even playing field for businesses, I mean, this is one of the issues now, right, that you have companies who are already allowing this benefit who have to compete with other companies that aren't. If we have those divisions state by state, that makes a very unequal territory for our businesses as well.
Does the existence of a, currently we have state, some states with these mandated family leave policies or paid leave policies, is that a disincentive to new businesses looking to relocate in those states?
That hasn't been found yet. It is certainly something that the business lobby has mentioned, but there's been zero data behind it, and there certainly have been people at think tanks who have been looking for it and not found it.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go back to the phone now. We have Peter on the line in Tyler. Hello, Peter.
Hi, how are you today?
Very well, thanks.
Great, thanks. I'm a tax attorney in Tyler, and one thing that I see that I'm worried about, I'm all for paid leave at the federal level, but there needs to be a safeguard to prevent Congress from going in to that trust fund or however that money's held and borrowing the income from that money every year to balance the budget. So I'm just wondering if in this scheme of things, if there'll be something similar in place.
I don't know if the authors of the Family Act, who are Kirsten Gillibrand and Representative DeLauro, have been thinking about that. I imagine if they watch House of Cards, it's probably occurred to them. But I imagine that there would be safeguards in place. At the moment, I think that they are just dealing with the situation of having to convince their own colleagues in Congress that this is a decent idea and indeed one that needs to be considered at all.
What did you learn about, on Capitol Hill, Republican interest in paid leave?
Well, it's interesting. Republicans clearly have come to terms with the fact that this is something they need to be talking about. And we know that best from a bill that Representative Martha Roby has put forth, which is, you know, the sort of conservative answer to this. That's a bill that says, hey, why don't you use overtime for your leave? But that's a tricky bill because it says employers can choose who can use overtime for their paid leave, and they can choose when they use it. Furthermore, the whole idea of overtime was a very hard-won policy to keep employers from overworking their employees. So this is a tough one. But what it does suggest is even the most entrenched conservatives know that this is something that they need to speak to.
We have an email here from Linda, who says she is an HR director. Not only is it employees with 50 or more employees, employers with 50 or more employees that qualify for Family Medical Leave Act, it is 50 or more employees in a 75-mile radius. So it's possible for half a company to qualify and the other half to not qualify. Also, she notes you have to have worked for an employer for at least 12 months. Less than half our employees qualify, she says. We have an alternative leave policy, but it's not paid either, so it's rarely utilized unless there is absolutely no other choice.
All of that is right. Listen to your HR person. What's also interesting is in terms of who actually gets to utilize what rights they do have. one thing which has been discovered through through experience in California is the less money you earn, the less you can afford to take 66% of your wages, which I believe is what California entitles you to. And so for people who need this most, if they aren't earning enough, they simply can't do it. And in certain states that are considering policies now, like Massachusetts and Colorado, what is being discussed is a graduated policy. So you could earn a bigger percentage of your paycheck back, depending on how much you need it.
Some people might recall the old formula that was bandied around, you know, you should try to put away, you know, 3 months' salary or 6 months' salary over the course of work, and that can act as your sort of self-paid leave. Is that simply not feasible for a lot of American families?
I think all we have to do is look at our economic situation since 2008 and consider what each baby or each dying parent looks like in the treacherous situations that we've seen. Though I have to say, I'm not even someone in one of those situations. And as a freelancer, it was very difficult for me to have my first baby. And I am incredibly grateful for my parents for purchasing long-term health insurance, because I stay up at night worrying about that sort of thing. You know, it's tough to live as an American with our housing costs, with what it means to maintain a place in the middle class if we're lucky enough to be there. And so these are issues that I think touch everyone.
Lauren, what are the benefits to businesses that are mandated to have leave policies and allow workers to come back to their jobs after an absence? We've talked about the fact that there's a neutral effect or maybe a positive effect on morale. What else could businesses count in the plus column for either voluntarily or having to comply with law and go along with these policies?
Well, any employer, or I would say probably any colleague, knows how tricky it is to train someone and get them up to speed. And so if you have someone who's been working for your company for a while and is good at it, imagine losing them just so they could have a family or take care of a family member. And then having to hire someone else, you know, go through the whole interview process, hire someone, train them. Maybe they work, maybe they don't work. It's a tricky thing. And simply the ability to reduce those turnover costs and what it means in terms of productivity and workplace life is a big deal.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also be part of the conversation by emailing think@kera.org, or you can send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think. Let's go back to the phones now. This time we have Kayla on the line in Denton. Hello, Kayla.
Hi. To answer your question earlier that you'd posed about setting income aside to act as your leave, I can say from personal experience, living in Texas, it's not feasible. I still do live below the poverty line. I qualified for some government assistance programs, but between working part-time and then being pregnant when I did take my leave, you know, I was constantly living from paycheck to paycheck, hand to mouth, you know, either paying off bills or just trying to keep myself fed and a roof over my head. There was nothing left by the time I took leave. And then they expect you to go back to work after 6 weeks. And it's like, if I can't pay my bills and if I can't buy groceries, how am I supposed to afford a babysitter for when I go back to work?
Thanks so much for your call. Is there anything you want to respond to there, Lauren?
Well, I think that kind of says it all, doesn't it? I mean, we live in this country that purports to value family, that wants us to be there for our children, that wants us to have children, wants us to take care of our parents, tells us that this should be the most important thing in our lives, and that indeed that the values behind this sort of thinking is the bedrock of our country. And then that's what we do. And we are the only country in the world that does. And I think that there is such a fundamental disconnect there that anyone could live that way or have those considerations in play. And in fact, I would say the majority of people do. And why that isn't a national crisis, I don't know.
I wonder if the fact that there has not been sort of overwhelming demand for this over time relates at all to the fact that many of the most powerful people who might have the kind of income to influence political movements and leaders are people whose jobs much more often are likely to come with paid leave.
Sure. And not just political leaders, but the whole culture, right? I mean, we should all be leaning in. And that really does become a huge issue, is we treat this as a personal pressure and a personal failing instead of looking at it in systemic terms. Now, if you want to talk about the roots behind this and why it is that the U.S. is such an outlier in this respect, you just have to look back to World War II when, you know, we needed women in the workplace. So we set up, you know, for example, federal subsidized daycare centers so that Rosie could go rivet. But once men came home, that was over. Whereas in Europe, where the men didn't come home, it was recognized that the world needed to create some sort of incentive for women to both work and have families and to support that as a viability. We didn't do that. And now that we have a population of working women, we still haven't. And it's fallen way, way behind.
What's the population now of households in this country headed by single mothers?
It's 25%, I believe.
And for those individuals, if they don't have family leave, I mean, how often are people getting fired from jobs because they had too many illness-related absences?
I mean, the data is sort of all over the map on that, and I think it becomes a question of reporting as well. But, you know, it's pretty bleak, and how could it not be? It's also interesting. I saw that there was new numbers out today about the marriage rate, which have just tumbled again to an all-time low. Now it's just gone from 50.5 to 50.3%. And so we can just expect a continuation of this. Certainly there are many couples who cohabitate, but increasingly the family is taking a different shape and we need to catch up to it.
Is there evidence? I would imagine that there are people who feel that if this is made available and it, you know, facilitates women in the workplace, that it's a disincentive somehow to marriage. Do you have evidence that because there is no family leave, or, you know, in states where there is family leave, that people are making different choices about when to marry, whether to raise children?
Well, it's tough because California has had it the longest, but it's California. So, you know, they always tend to do things a little bit differently out there. You know, I think that it's hard to isolate this as a cause or effect, but it certainly is a part of a larger system that incentivizes a more traditional family structure that has become impossible for most people and I would say undesirable for many.
We're speaking this hour with journalist Lauren Sandler about her article, Taking Care of Our Own, about the question of paid leave, federally mandated paid leave. It appears in the June issue of the New Republic magazine. Our conversation today is part of KERA's One Crisis Away initiative. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Graduate Liberal Studies, offering evening programs for a Master of Liberal Studies and the new Doctor of Liberal Studies degree. You can design your own master's or doctoral degree at SMU this fall. More at smu.edu/GLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with journalist Lauren Sandler about her article in the June issue of the New Republic magazine. It's called Taking Care of Our Own. It's about the proposal for federally mandated paid leave for all workers. And we're having the conversation as part of KERA's One Crisis Away initiative. You can join the conversation at 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. Lauren, when we talk about paid leave, we often frame it in terms of taking care of a newborn or a very sick spouse or an elderly parent. Does paid leave, FMLA at this point, does it have to be taken consecutively or can it be broken up over the course of a given period of time, a year or whatever?
That's a good question. I believe that it can be, as long as it's 12 weeks maximum over a year, I believe that's what you get.
Mm-hmm. The thing I haven't heard in this conversation and didn't see in the piece is something that I've thought about a lot, which is that without paid leave, there are lots of people who feel obligated to show up at work when they themselves are just like very sick.
This is true. The piece is very much about paid family leave explicitly. But the paid sick leave question is a big one. And that is what we tell people. We tell them that if you're not going to get time off, you need to be there for it. It's no surprise to me, though. I do think it surprised a lot of people on the Hill that when Patty Murray put forth her paid sick leave bill recently, the one that Obama called for in his State of the Union, that it got tremendous support across both sides of the aisle. I think because this is something that just feels so universal and basic. If one is ill and one cannot work and one cannot afford to not work, what does one do, right? I mean, you can choose to not have a child and you can hopefully have someone else take care of your parents. But when it's yourself, what on earth is there to do?
What did you learn about members of Congress and the policies they set for their own staffs regarding this sort of thing?
Well, they tend to have pretty decent paid leave policy. You know, there's someone who surveyed all the different Congress members, and some of them didn't report back. But, you know, I don't think it'll shock you to learn that, you know, John Boehner has, like, the lousiest policy for his staff members. And Kirsten Gillibrand, who's authored the Family Act, has a really good one and usually has someone who's out all the time, which makes reporting on her office often a real pain when the communications person's out and the chief of staff is out. But you understand it because she's walking the walk. It does seem that the more conservative a member of Congress is, the worse the policy is. But there are, of course, exceptions.
Boehner offers 2 weeks of paid maternity leave.
Yeah, it's pretty bad, huh? I remember after my C-section, I wasn't allowed to walk upstairs or downstairs for 8 weeks. And I wonder how that would have worked on the Capitol Hill steps.
Hmm. When people talk about that, there are lots of different ideas about how to do this at the federal level. You think that it makes more sense than allowing each state to tailor a family leave policy to its individual economy. Is this simply because of the issue that you talked about with the economy of scale? Because it does seem that there would be states who might say, we want to do this, but we want to do it with a 50-50 split, or we want to, you know, have something that seems to work better in this region of the country.
Absolutely. What we learned through the march towards FMLA is that this was something that really needed to work in tandem with states. By the time that law was signed in 1993, I believe there are 28 states that had their own leave policy. And so through that process, the federal government was able to see what worked best. And I think that that's very much what's happening right now, looking at California, looking at New Jersey, and more recently, looking at Rhode Island, seeing what systems are really functioning best and really seem to be fairest for all of their citizens. However, it takes a long time to get there, and this is something that we need now. And frankly, it's something which is accepted as a basic right everywhere else in the world, and I feel like that should be the case here too. So on the one hand, you need the laboratory of the states, and on the other hand, we need this to move. And I think that we've learned what we need to learn so far.
How much time is appropriate? What is Gillibrand pushing for?
How much time until that passes?
No. How much time does her bill and Rosa DeLauro's bill call for in terms of paid leave at a percentage of one's regular salary? Is it 12 weeks?
Almost all of these bills, yes, exactly. They stick with the 12-week FMLA protection. They just make it paid.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. Is this something that you find that people are more like, do younger workers use this as they start to have families, and then people as they get toward the end of their careers, maybe at that point they have an elderly relative? And I wonder if the stage of people's working lives has a lot to do with if and when they take family leave.
I think that traditionally it has, but when you look at changing demographics, that is going to be a different story. So, for example, by 2030, we're going to have double the number of Americans over the age of 65, right? Mm-hmm. So it's going from 35 million to 70 million elderly people. I don't want to say 65 is elderly. My parents would have a heart attack. But, you know, getting up there, people who need to be cared for eventually coming closer. And so it's estimated that by 2030, we're going to have about two-thirds of Americans caring for older parents. When you also look at the numbers of Alzheimer's patients that are skyrocketing, I do think that caring for our parents is going to become a bigger and bigger issue nationally. And so while this is something that tends to get talked about in terms of having a baby or adopting a baby when one is sort of at that early peak of career, late 20s into 30s, maybe into early 40s, I think that increasingly this is going to become a lifelong issue as our parents get older.
Is there any talk of a provision that would allow businesses who just have to replace the missing employee for the days that they're not there? I'm trying to think of what that might be, you know. If a doctor needed to take family leave and had patients who needed to be covered, that sort of thing. Is there any talk of something that would allow companies to draw from some kind of fund in order to pay for a temporary worker in the stead of one who's missing?
Yes. In fact, Seattle is currently considering a policy for its city workers that is allocating a part of the budget to pay for temporary workers. So, you know, for example, when you have a fireman on paternity leave, it's pretty hard to be down a fireman. So you need to hire a new temporary one. And there has to be money for that. But it is certainly something that different budgets can provide for.
You found interesting evidence that shows that men who take paternity leave go on to be more actively engaged, involved fathers.
This is true, and not just in the beginning, throughout a kid's life. And so that, to me, is a significant investment for mothers, for fathers, and for kids alike. This is something that we have learned from California, where men are taking paternity leave, not just, you know, white-collar men who tend to take it, but well, increasingly into the blue-collar population in California, men are taking paternity leave, and it has shown that there is greater bonding. This is all something that we have learned through the rest of the world that has decent paternity leave policy. Through Europe, they show that men really are far more involved in their kids' life on all levels of caretaking if they have paternity leave.
Of course, it's hard. You can't absolutely draw a cause and effect there, though, right? It might be the men who were more likely to be engaged fathers are the ones who chose to take that leave.
Possibly, but when you look at populations where the majority of men do take it and the majority of men stay involved, you know, it does something to a family. And it is the reason that Norway is requiring paternity leave for fathers now, because they want that population to look that way.
What kind of grassroots efforts have you found to be most intriguing with regard to trying to push this through and garner support on Capitol Hill?
Oh, that's interesting. It is a huge grassroots movement. We're talking about this right now in terms of high-level politicians, but this is really an old-fashioned grassroots revolution which is happening bottom-up. Now politicians are catching up, but throughout the whole country, and especially in states where this has actually happened, this is really, you know, this is people of all demographics, all colors, all economic backgrounds, all faiths, you name it, who have stories to tell. And advocates are organizing those stories. They're disseminating them. They're making sure that they're heard. And that is really the most effective tool right now. Because like that caller who called in before talking about how tough it was for her, when you have those stories by the millions, it is really hard to ignore. They speak to you, and they are speaking to politicians.
You know that, Lauren, I hear this and it makes perfect sense to me. And yet, you know, we have to say to ourselves, well, then why has this not happened? Is it the business lobby? And what element of the business lobby, if we know that there are large corporations and, you know, certain aspects of the business community that seems to think that even voluntary paid leave is a good idea?
I think it's a number of things. There certainly is a business lobby, and that is something that we can target as an organized element of this. But I think that ideology is more at play here. and a number of different forms of ideology. You know, we have our American bootstraps ideology that tells us that you should go it alone, and if you fail at doing this on your own, then you failed, right? As a parent, as a child, that this one's on you. It's part of our ideology and how we think about women in the family, which is very different than people think about this in other parts of the world. That's related to our own Calvinism. That's related to our own gender history. This is a big, big issue that really touches on, I believe, any number of aspects that holds this country back, from gender equality, from having a system that allows greater equality across economic classes. This is a pretty deep one. And so for conservative politicians, both on state houses and on the Hill, this is something which is very much, I believe, about both notions of capitalism and also notions of what a woman's life is supposed to look like. And I think that for the whole population, we haven't considered this to be a right yet. The rest of the world considers this to be a right, and we don't. And I think that if we can have a different cultural conversation about parenthood, one that doesn't make it all about our individual actions and really starts looking at the systemic factors here that hold us back, maybe this can change.
Back to the phones one more time here. We have Paul on the line in Dallas. Hello, Paul.
Hi. Thank you. I guess a question for your guest. I guess I'm one of those whose teeth kind of get set on edge when I hear about things that Europe is doing that we should be doing. I guess, I think that it would have to be proven on our own terms in our own territory rather than just point to Europe.
I'm not just pointing to Europe.
I do have a question. Is in your research and in your study of what, as you put it, the rest of the world is doing, have you seen any pushback from any of the citizens or businesses in those countries that have to pay for these policies?
Thanks for your call, Paul.
Certainly. So the only country on Earth that doesn't offer paid maternity leave is Papua New Guinea. That's it. A tiny collection of islands in the South Pacific that, you know, has very little infrastructure. It's impassable in many parts. It has traditional villages, traditional law. That is our only ally on this topic. You know, when some people talk about this, they say, oh, it's just Papua New Guinea and Oman. In fact, Oman actually has this. It was just left out of the UN report. A few years ago when I started reporting on this, Sierra Leone was one of four alongside us. They now have this policy. So the notion that this is something that just Europe has is a real fallacy. This is something that is accepted as a right everywhere else on Earth. And like any issue, sure, there's pushback in certain places. Sure, there are people with different ideas. But the majority of all of these countries simply believes that this is a basic right, and we're not there yet.
If a federal policy were to be funded through something like the Social Security Trust, could we guarantee that it would be adequately funded to take care of the need as employees pay into it and then draw out of it?
Oh, who knows what we can guarantee, but we could at least have, you know, a really deep national conversation about it and a conversation about how to make this work. You know, Social Security has worked so far. I realize that, you know, the dagger sort of over the head of Social Security all the time. And it's hard to know how things will change in the future, but for now, that certainly seems viable. You know, the reason that the White House said, okay, now it's time to start having a conversation about paid leave is because since 2008, at least this is how Valerie Jarrett explained it to me, you know, the idea of doing something like this didn't feel economically viable. But now that we are on the other side of the recession, and now that businesses are beginning to understand what they need to do to be globally competitive, it's time for a different conversation, and I think that we can apply that logic to what it means to have a trust.
Journalist Lauren Sandler's article, Taking Care of Our Own, appears in the June issue of The New Republic. Lauren, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for taking time on this issue.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is associate producer. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. I'm on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think. The show's email address is think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.